Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Picture it, Los Angeles, 2023.
Welcome to Out on the Lanai, the only Golden Girls podcast you're ever going to need to listen to. Who am I? Oh, I'm H. Allen Scott / Sadie Pines.
And I'm Carrie Doherty.
That's who you are. And this is a podcast where we used to watch an episode of the Golden Girls and then talk about it, but we ran out of those episodes. And then we watched the spinoff, The Golden Palace, but we ran out of those episodes too. And so now, what do we do? What do we do right now? We do whatever the hell we want.
Your newskies. Today we're doing, I took that out for a spin, it was awful. Today we're doing another Golden Rewind, where we go back and rewatch our favorite episodes of The Golden Girls and re-talk about them and offer new insights since we first started breaking down these episodes back in 2014. And today we are talking about season 4, episode 19, Till Death Do We Volley, a.k.a. the one with the Dorothy Killed Trudy party.
Oh, my God. Now, back when we originally watched this, we did a lot of talking about, like, practical jokes that we play on our friends and each other and stuff. So we've covered all of those bases, and I think we've both came to an agreement that, like, we don't really like practical jokes. Is that right? Do you still stand by that, Carrie?
Well, I do believe that the first time we recorded this episode, that this was the first time I told the practical joke story about pranking my friend Kim with the clown.
Yeah, which is a classic story that I think everyone remembers fondly.
Yes, and I know it's been brought up multiple times on the podcast since then, but I would say if you do want to hear a story of the worst practical joke I've ever played, go back and watch our original listen to of this episode. I don't believe I am fond of practical jokes. I think after that experience, I think we can agree. And then you yourself. No, right?
I've never been my mother was very big into practical jokes. I've never really been, I'm not an easily embarrassed person. So I'm not, if someone does a practical joke onto me, I tend to just sort of liken it up to, oh, that's comedy, or someone's riffing me, or I'm gullible, because I am a very gullible person. So, like, I'm not embarrassed at all, which I think makes me the worst person to do a practical joke on, because if you do something to me in the hopes of embarrassing me, I'm just going to be like, it's Tuesday, whatever. You know, like, I'm not going to care. So I'm sort of a bad person to even do a practical joke on. And if I was doing a practical joke, I don't know, I liken it, which there is a very good fart joke in this episode, but I liken it to a fart joke because, like, it's just lazy to me. You know what I mean? It's just like, if you can't be funny just as yourself, like, just you being you, and you have to, like, resort to practical jokes to, like, get a laugh out of people and, like, laugh at someone's embarrassment, you're just not very talented, and maybe you should not do funny things. Like, maybe you're just not funny, and that's okay. You don't have to do the crazy things like faking your own death.
So, yeah, I'm with you in that it's sort of, like, the lowest, it's, like, the lowest form of, one of the lowest forms of comedy, I think. Yeah. However, in watching the most recent Jackass movie.
Oh, my God. I did love it. I did love it. I have to admit. I saw it in theaters and I enjoyed it.
For that type of practical jokery, I mean, you have to be on another level in terms of your thrill seeking. Because the physical and emotional anguish that these people put themselves through to be a part of this like friend group.
Yeah.
It's astonishing. And they're getting, I mean, if you just watch it, they're getting like their tongues bit by scorpions, a lot of mashing of the balls and wieners.
Yeah.
There's just so, I mean, people are, they're just hurting themselves. I mean, I think Johnny Knoxville, I think, did he lose a testicle from a bull?
I don't even
I
know.
Think,
I
like,
don't even know. But
he
I,
had a really bad, and he, oh, and he, no, he had a concussion.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it, I think he got, I think he got hit in the balls in a different thing, but he got a very, very bad concussion. I think he had brain damage.
I think it's fair to say he's been hit in the balls by many things, many things. I will say Jackass has always kind of, I mean, I love Jackass and I enjoy watching it, but I don't even see that as practical joking as much as sort of just like absurd, extreme comedy, pratfalling. Like, it's not necessary. I mean, there is a practical joke element to it, sure. Of course there is.
Yeah, they're pulling practical jokes on each other, yeah.
But it never really rings as just that to me. Like, a practical joke to me is, mm-hmm. is the intention of a practical joke, my definition of how I perceive a practical joke, is that it is intended to make somebody else embarrassed or somebody else mm-hmm. the butt of a joke. And I don't see Jackass like that necessarily, because a lot of times they're doing it in a way to, I mean, you're in on it, or like, you know, you expect it from this friend group, or like, you know what I mean? And also, just as a gay homosexual growing up with Jackass, I applaud them for the years of peen visibility in film and television that that was so lacking in so many different areas of my life. So thank you, Johnny Knoxville, for the peen. But I don't see the practical joking, but I do see, I mean, I enjoy them, I guess. I don't know. I'm not like pressed about it or anything. I do think Trudy is meaner than Dorothy in the practical joke department. I think she's more ruthless. She's more 100%. Johnny Knoxville, and Dorothy is Steve-O.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, I think that's a fair assumption that, yes, what Trudy does is much worse, at just like Johnny Knoxville is usually, he's rarely on the receiving end of the worst practical jokes, and Steve-O is a lot of the time and is like kind of a good sport about it.
Yeah.
But
unlike Steve-O, Dorothy's not, this episode we saw more, it was just a glimpse, but it was similar to Steve-O and his frequent nudity. It was the most of Dorothy's leg we have ever seen in an episode of the Golden Girls. I don't know if you spotted it. Did you spot it?
When she was playing tennis?
Not when she was playing tennis. It was after she was playing tennis at the table. And she stood up.
Of course, because we never see them.
Yeah, of course.
Oh.
And she stood up. And she was wearing the shortest little tennis skirt, of course. Or maybe shorts. I don't know if they were a skirt or shorts. And you see Bea Arthur kind of pulling down the dress because she realizes her legs are showing. And then for the rest of the scene, she's completely shot from the waist up. So, like, we actually saw
I'll have to go Bea back and
Arthur
rewatch that
thigh. I mean, back when we first watched it, I don't think I was able to even see it because my television wasn't that big. And, you know, it's just we weren't looking for that. But now I have this massive television. And when she stood up, I was like, Bea Arthur thigh. I was, like, taken aback because I've never seen that level of skin on Bea Arthur before. I was just kind of blown away by it.
That is a really great observation. We definitely didn't notice that the first time around. I feel like we would have, I would have remembered talking about it. Wow.
Yeah.
You really, well, now that you do have that big TV, you know, you have to go back and rewatch those old Jackass.
Yes.
Movies and TV shows. So you can see the peen in the,
do
however many inches your television is.
Do not worry. I do also want to, I want to bring up one thing about this episode, because I was really, when you texted me, because you usually, I mean, I suggest rewinds, but you usually suggest the rewinds or what we're going to go with, and which I applaud because the anxiety of me choosing would be too much. But so when you texted me that we were doing this, I was so excited because of Anne Francis. Anne Francis, who plays Trudy, I had never read her bio on IMDb. Now, you know how on IMDb, like, either the talent can provide it or, like, somebody writes some weird bio for this talent.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Gary Brumber. I don't know. His email is provided. I don't want to share it. But on her IMDb, Gary goes in and says, so, like, what's so interesting about Anne is she was, like, a classic MGM, like, 20th Century Fox sort of, like, bit player. But she was a Broadway person, too. And she was just sort of, like, a classic, not character actor. She was just a beauty in a lot of movies and TV stuff. Mm-hmm. Great two great episodes of The Twilight Zone. However, she was in Funny Girl, in a very small part in Funny Girl, as sort of, like, you know, Barbara Streisand's, like, not friend, but, like, not assistant. I don't know who she, they never really defined her character, but she was definitely in it. And her voice is so unique. Even though she's from New York, she sounds like an old-timey Southerner slash East Coast person. Like, she has this undefinable accent to her that is just so uniquely her, right?
Yeah, I had that note that I was like, oh, it's interesting. Her and Dorothy are both from Brooklyn, but she sounds more like Blanche. Yeah. And then I was like, well, I guess I used to sound like Mark Wahlberg, but I moved to Georgia and my accent, like, neutralized when I was 19. So I was like, you know, maybe, you know, Trudy moved, you know, somewhere in the South. That was just kind of my assumption, but definitely a very memorable voice.
Very memorable.
Voice for sure.
And that's how, when we first watched this, I was like, oh my God, she's in Funny Girl. So I went to read Anne's bio, which I didn't really know much more about her other than the Funny Girl in this episode. And Gary, you can tell Gary falls hard for Anne Francis. Gary has, like, his wallpapered Anne Francis room. It goes, the actress returned to films on occasion, the most controversial being Funny Girl, in which her co-star, Barbara Streisand, or her co-starring role as Barbara Streisand's pal, was heartlessly reduced to a glorified cameo. I mean, he's still pressed. And then he goes on, for such a promising start with such an amazing stamina and longevity, the girl with the sexy beauty mark probably deserved better. I the way he loves Anne Francis, I love Gary. I love Gary.
I love that. Gary, thank you so much for doing her justice. Justice for Anne.
He didn't bring up the episode of The Golden Girls, though, which I think is a shame. I think Gary needs to get into the episode of The Golden Girls, but he probably is more old school Anne Francis fan.
Sure, of course. Well, speaking of getting into it, we have a lot to talk about with this episode. Should we? Especially how much of a Blanche episode it is, but we'll get into it. Let's take a break and we'll come back and dive in.
Oh my God, I'm so excited!
And we're back. So I know I just blew everybody's minds right before the break by saying this is a Blanche episode.
I agree
with
you.
This is a Blanche Devereaux episode. Blanche had some of the best lines in this episode, like the runner of Trudy asking a question that's not being asked of Blanche and Blanche answering it is so good. The, you know, like, how does it feel to have your butt whipped? And Blanche being like, oh, well, oddly, I find it titillating. Yeah. Oh, okay, you weren't talking to me. Like those. And then the story about Kathy Lee, which we'll play a clip from it a little bit later, but I watched it like three times because I was just so enamored with Blanche in that moment.
This whole episode, I so agree with you. I would not go so far, unlike the episode of the actor, I would not go so far and assign this episode to Blanche because I thought the actor episode was a Dorothy episode. This episode is still very much a Dorothy episode to me. However, the Rue McClanahan, she's a wonderful actress, of course, and she can do a leading, she can carry a story like nobody else. She's great at that. I think she personally excels when she's reacting to a story.
I agree.
I mean, you look at the chronic fatigue syndrome episode, and I think that's some of Rue McClanahan's best work because it was all about her staying up all night and writing this book and Little Balls of Sunshine and like all of those absurd, almost pratfall-y type line deliveries where she's just throwing it all at the wall and she's carrying the humor of the episode all on her back. And it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's the same with this episode, but this episode is a great example of how great of an actress, a character actress, Rue McClanahan is and how she can assist a story and carry it on and give it nuance and humor. And like she can move it along while at the same time, like making it very much her own.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting you say that Blanche is always really strong when she's like reacting to someone else's story, essentially, which I immediately go to A Little Romance
yeah.
with everything she did with Dr. Jonathan Newman, even Forgive Me, Father. Mm-hmm. You know, when it's her with the priest, when she's in not like in a maybe an uncomfortable situation, or she's inserting Blanche into a situation that is not calling for it. And I felt like, oh, it was
it also
just,
works in serious episodes too. It works with when Rose has the HIV scare, and Blanche is such an important, I would say in that episode, Sophia is the reaction humor in the episode. However, Blanche is the reaction serious part, serious tone. I mean, Rose is just spending the episode terrified, rightfully so. So it's up to Blanche to carry the real drama and story of the episode and explain the serious things of the episode. And it's so amazing because it just shows you how Dorothy is the character that she is. Rose is the character that she is. And so is Sophia. And you could argue that they're one note, whereas Blanche has peaks and valleys that we see along the series that, like, is kind of mind-blowing sometimes, that you don't see with the other characters in a lot of ways. You see it more often, I think. I would argue you see it more often with Blanche than you do any of the other characters.
I would say you see different sides of Blanche more than the other women. I certainly wouldn't describe them as one note.
No,
because,
I don't mean that necessarily.
Like, you know, because you see vulnerability in Dorothy. You see, like, Rose with her sort of competitive side, where she loses her sort of, you know, Rose is always the nice one sort of attitude. But certainly I think you see, the greatest variety with Blanche, 100%.
Yeah.
And in this particular episode, so as everybody knows, Trudy McMahon, great, great name, by the way, is Dorothy's best friend from high school. She's coming for their high school reunion. I loved this moment with Blanche where she says that she loves high school reunions. She said that she went to hers and she was the most successful person. Yeah. And Dorothy's like, didn't you go to school with that doctor who won the Nobel Prize? And she's like, oh yeah, but she let her looks go to hail. Like,
what I mean, we talked about this in the original episode, but I think it bears repeating. Does anybody have high school reunions not in their hometown where their high school is? I don't think they do. I don't think it's a thing.
Oh my God, that's right. I just realized that. No.
I mean, yeah.
Well, okay. Okay. The only thing I can think is if we're basing it on the stereotype that all older people move to Florida when they reach a certain age, then you could argue that most of their class lived in Miami or in Florida at that time.
See, I would argue
when
that
it's
it
a
would
high school
they would have sort of like a pen pal thing where everyone that lives in Miami might have a meetup at some restaurant or something, but the actual reunion, because to me in my high school, the reunions always happen around like Thanksgiving time when people will be traveling back to their hometown with family and friends and stuff. But at Dorothy's age, I mean, I don't know if they're traveling back to see family all that often. So like, it's so weird to me. It's so weird to me.
I mean, yeah, it feels more, I mean, with the amount of people that are in the room, again, unless like this is real dark, unless a lot of their classmates just passed away, but there's like 20 people in that room. So it definitely feels more like a local meetup than a reunion.
Yeah.
But that's the only way to explain why Trudy is in town, because they haven't seen each other for so long. Thanks. But it is also interesting that you would hold, usually reunions are held at either like at a restaurant or like
a bar
at a bar or at like the ballroom of a, you know, a hotel or something if it's a big, big class. But yeah, just at somebody's house was really funny.
Did you go to your high school reunion?
I'm sure we talked. no, I haven't been to any high school reunions. I think I lived in New York, I think for my, I think there was a 5 year, and I remember being like, I just saw you 5 years. And then I think I had just moved from New York to L. No, I still lived in New York for my 10 year. I guess I just didn't go to it.
I went to one.
But it's because everybody was on Facebook by then.
Yeah, of course.
And I was like, I see what you're all doing.
I know. I have, anyway. I mean, I feel like I have so many people who just respond to me on Instagram and stuff that it's like, I don't need to have a reunion. I know about you. You're responding to all my stupid shit. Like, I don't get whatever. But I did go to one, the 10 year, And which is crazy because I only graduated 4 years ago. And I went to my 10-year one, and it was when I was going through chemo and stuff. So I was like, it was after chemo, but I was like still recovering, you know? And my high school, I remember I was feeling so embarrassed, and I graduated high school with Nikki Glaser. And we weren't like crazy, crazy good friends. We were friends in high school, but I wouldn't say we were like best friends. But we would connect. I mean, I've stayed in touch with her probably more, and then two other friends more than anybody else, really, because what we do. And I
and for anybody living under a rock, Nikki Glaser is a very, very funny comedian.
Yeah, she's famous. And I remember telling her, I was like, I'm not looking forward to this. This is not going to be good. I don't want to do this. And I went in, and she was there, and it was cool, and it was chill, and people were talking to me, but I was bald, and there was a lot of attention. And then this guy came up, because there was this joke about a bar mitzvah. I think I've told it on the podcast before. And I was like, oh my God, I have to tell you this joke that I have in my act about like your bar mitzvah to my classmate. And he got so pissed. He got angry at me for like, even though the joke isn't about him, it has nothing, like, it's not offensive in any way, shape, or form. And I never even mentioned his name, but he got offended that I have a joke about his bar mitzvah in my act. And I was like, well, you're bald, so whatever. And I was so like, I pulled a Blanche and I was like, well, you clearly don't take care of yourself because you're ugly and you're bald now. So bye.
And I won the Nobel Prize. So was it a joke about him specifically,
no,
but you didn't use his name? Or was
it a joke about
something?
It was
that
a joke about me
mitzvah?
And a practical joke that my mother played on me when I went to his bar mitzvah. This is.
So he's not even the butt of the joke.
No, he's not even the butt of the joke. Everyone's going to hate in the comments because another one of my tangents. But the joke is that my mother told, because I'd never been to a bar mitzvah before, and my mother told me that they circumcise all the boys at the bar mitzvah. Like, they circumcise the bar mitzvah boy at the bar mitzvah. So I believed her, and I went around telling everyone at the bar mitzvah that, oh my God, he's going to get circumcised. He's going to get circumcised. So I went up to his mother at the bar mitzvah, and I was like, hi, Mrs. So-and-so. Great party, but I'm Mormon. I was at the time. I'm Mormon, so I can't see, you know, him get circumcised. And she just looked at me, and she took me to another group of women, and she was like, I want you to say exactly what you just said to all of these women. And I did, and I got the biggest laugh. They all were laughing hysterically. In that moment, I knew my mother was playing a horrible practical joke on me. Didn't talk to her for like a week, but...
You stole his thunder. That's why he was mad at you.
A little part of me.
Because you were hilarious at his bar mitzvah.
A little part of me was like, that was the first time I told a joke and really killed. And it was like, it felt good. You know what I mean? So it's a good moment. It's a good story. Whatever. Fuck you, dude.
It's a really funny story. Yeah. Well, that to me is, that falls in like the Dorothy category of like, you can't get mad at that.
Yeah.
That's not you telling that joke. That falls in more into the Dorothy, less of the Trudy. If it was in the Trudy category, then that dude may have been a little bit more justified in his anger.
He's bald.
Speaking of practical jokes. So Trudy and Dorothy, I mean, this is their deal. This is practical jokes define their friendship. Mm-hmm. And the most notorious one that Trudy played on Dorothy was that everybody on the tennis team, she said they were all going to wear their tennis whites to prom, which, like, you know what? Save some money on a dress. Sure.
Yeah.
And then Dorothy showed up. And of course, she was the only one wearing hers.
Yeah.
And she's like, but you know what? You know, Trudy's coming to town. I'm going to brush up on my tennis skills. Like, this is going to be great. So Trudy is it, and she says something like, you know, I'm going to practice tennis. Trudy's coming in like a week and a half. So Dorothy's like, got some time. And then we cut to like, I guess, a week and a half later, and Trudy's about to arrive. And there's a really great exchange between Dorothy, Blanche, and Rose that I would love to play.
Oh, I am so excited. I can't believe I'm going to see Trudy again after all these years.
Oh, I'm excited for you too, Dorothy. That's why I want everything perfect. I'm making Scandinavia's oldest and most traditional appetizer treat, cheese and crackers.
Cheese and crackers, Rose. Not eggs gefluffen? Ham and Gunter Hoggins? Pigs and a Sven Gabluten?
No, but you sure know how to make a girl's mouth water.
So, two things about this exchange. One, I love that for once they're giving Rue McClanahan all of the weird, like, yeah, Scandinavian St. Olafian words to say, because I feel like poor Betty White, like, she always had them and she always killed them. So it's fun that they gave them to Blanche.
Yeah.
Another thing I noticed about this scene is that Dorothy's excitement with Trudy coming, it sounds a lot like when she's excited about, like, yes, Patrick Vaughn or Burt Reynolds. Like, Patrick Vaughn. Oh, Trudy, I'm so excited she's coming. Like, it's that,
which is
it's
so,
that really, like, giddy excitement.
I mean, it's, oh, I don't even know. It's so interesting when I don't react to out of town guests the way that Dorothy does. I'm always like, oh, brother. Okay, we got to do this brunch, and then we got to do this thing, and then we have to spend the last day together. And all, like, I think of all the things, and I'm like, all the things that I have to do in my regular life because they're coming into my life and disrupting it.
Right. And meanwhile, Dorothy's like, Mr. Gordon.
Yeah.
That's funny. I feel like I'm the same way. Yeah, it's just that stress of like, oh gosh, this person's coming and I still have to clean.
Well,
but
I mean,
no,
you know,
never Dorothy.
Where we used to record in my old apartment, I lived in a studio apartment in Los Feliz here in Los Angeles. And I wasn't all broke the whole time. I could have afforded a one bedroom, but I stayed in that studio until I got in a relationship with Michael because for the very sole reason of not having out of town guests. I did not want anyone thinking that I had the space in my living room to house them for 2 or 3 days. I live in a studio. It would be awkward for you to stay here. So no, go somewhere else.
I love that. That's so funny.
Yeah.
That is. I never knew that. That's really funny.
I'm telling you, this runs deep, guys. My hatred of interactions runs deep.
That's so funny. So funny. I never knew that.
Yeah.
So Trudy shows up like a tornado of energy.
Yeah.
And I think we should play her entrance because it's funny that they play tennis because the sort of quips going back and forth between Trudy and Dorothy, it's like a tennis match that you're watching. It's amazing.
Oh, Trudy.
Dorothy. It's been so long. Boy, you look... It's been so long.
I know, and you look exactly the way you did at our high school graduation. Of course, rumors were that you were 3 months pregnant.
I want you to meet my husband, Jack.
You didn't tell me you had such a handsome husband.
Didn't tell you he was rich either. Oh,
that's my Trudy. Oh, you haven't lost your sense of humor. Or those pesky 10 pounds.
Her husband was hot.
A pretty good looking guy.
No, he's one of those.
He was a pretty good looking guy.
He's one of those guys at the gym that are like, that are older and you know they're probably married, but they're like giving you the eye and you're like, oh, in another world.
I love the way that Trudy and Dorothy talk to each other. It's very funny. It's like a much lighter version of what we sort of see with Sophia and Aunt Angela, because obviously there's like a lot of like past shit between the two of them.
Speaking of Aunt Angela, I have to ask you, there's a dress that Sophia wears in this episode. It's a red dress. It's a shapeless red sort of dress that she wore. And it reminded me a lot. I didn't check it out or anything, but I looked at it and I was like, did Aunt Angela wear that? Like I
can't... Aunt Angela, I'll have to go. I know what red dress you're talking about. And I do remember Aunt Angela wearing a red dress. I'm trying to think. Remember,
it reminded me of a shapeless dress that she wore too, because they wore similar outfits. So like,
yeah. And they were the same size
too. Yeah.
The two actors. Yeah.
Something
that's
to
possible.
Look into for all the fans.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Do a side by side and S by S. So the two of them, I mean, their back and forths keep going and it's so great. And at one point Trudy's talking about how strong Dorothy was after Stanley walked out on her for that flight attendant. And she goes, Dorothy, I admire your gumption. And Dorothy goes, and I, your breast implants. And Bea Arthur's delivery is like, it's so perfect when she says that.
It makes me wonder, because they are so good together, it made me wonder if they knew each other in like the Broadway days. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they must have.
Yeah. They definitely, there was a rhythm, you know, whether they knew each other, whether it was just their rehearsals together or Yeah, it definitely felt like there was a history between them. Maybe they're just both really great actors, but I'd be curious to know if they knew each other prior to this.
Yeah.
So Dorothy and Trudy go into the kitchen, and Trudy's husband asks Sophia a question.
And it's going.
And we have to play this moment because this whole moment, Estelle Getty is just on fire in this clip.
Give me a hand in the kitchen. Were they like that in high school, Mrs. Petrillo?
Oh no, her breasts were actually a lot smaller back then.
I meant, were they rivals?
What is this, Nova? I don't have all the answers.
I'm afraid you'll have to excuse Sophia, Jack.
Oh, you heard that? I thought I was safe backed up against these pillows.
I don't usually like a fart joke, but if anyone can deliver a good fart joke, it is Estelle Getty.
I mean, just listen to those
Yeah.
laughs. Like, for an actor, especially, for a theater actor, and she's performing for an audience, it just must be so validating and nice and joyful to get that kind of laugh. When she says,
Yeah.
"Oh, you heard that?" That laugh lasts a while. She's just
Yeah.
getting laugh after laugh. And I'm just like, I'm so excited that she had that
I do want to
experience.
report one thing. So B. Arthur and Anne Francis did appear in, not on Broadway, but in, they may have done something on Broadway together, but apparently Anne Francis is in the TV movie called My First Love that B. Arthur did, where she wore the same outfit from an episode of The Golden Girls. She also wore in this TV movie, literally the exact same outfit in a TV movie. And the movie came out in 1988, and when did this episode come out? I mean, they must have probably either just have worked on it, or yeah, the movie came out a year before this episode. So, like, maybe they had that rhythm from that movie.
Yeah, I love that you looked that up because now we have the answer. So yeah, they knew each other from that. They may have known each other elsewhere, but we know at the least they were in that movie together. Thank you for looking that
You're
up.
welcome, and we'll watch that in a rewind, not a rewind, a beyond someday, because people have requested My First Love.
Oh, great. I would love to do that one. So the women, Blanche and Rose go to check on Trudy and Dorothy. They go into the kitchen to find them arm wrestling,
So
which
weird.
is such a fun sight because, what kind of friendship do you have with someone where you can't go a full minute without challenging the other one to an arm wrestle? Like, especially at that age, like,
Yeah.
and so I go like, well, how did that happen, right? So I feel like maybe Trudy and Dorothy went into the kitchen. Dorothy went to like lift a tray of food, and Trudy was like, "Oh, let me help with that." And Dorothy goes, "No, I've got it." And then they're just off, and then, 10 seconds later, they're arm wrestling to try to prove who is stronger.
Yeah, it's so good. I mean, I want to know the setup to
And
it,
then
but it's
we,
so good.
it's so good just for, to walk in and find them doing that. And then so after, so Trudy beats Dorothy at arm wrestling, which I kind of feel like in real life, like B. Arthur would have won, but like whatever, I'm
One
biased.
thousand percent.
And she goes, and this is the start of Blanche's runner of answering questions that are not being asked of her, where Trudy says, how does it feel to get your butt whipped? And Blanche goes, well, sometimes I find it strangely titillating, but oh, no, you're not talking to me. Like, oh, it's so good.
It's so good.
So to keep up with the competitive streak, Dorothy says she has a great idea. She's like, Trudy, we're going to play a little tennis match together. And I think Trudy calls her a pathetic middle-aged cow. And Dorothy says, I'm looking forward to it, you miserable sack of cellulite. Miserable, that is a cluster of words that sound so appealing to leave the mouth. Miserable sack of cellulite.
It's one
Like,
of
what a
those,
fun,
I
that
mean,
sounds like a warm-up.
their insults, the way they volleyed their insults were so perfect, but it's one of those things that, like, if I said it as an insult, it wouldn't come out the way B. Arthur can deliver it. You know what I mean? It's sort of like I posted a clip the other day of Megan Mullally from Will and Grace, and she says something being like, please accept my apology then in which it was intended, or I'll kick you in the genitals. And she's meaning like genitalia, like she's meaning the genitals, you know what I mean? But I've been trying to use genitals in a sentence, and it's really difficult because I'm not Megan Mullally. And it's the same with B. Arthur. She delivers these insults, or Estelle Getty even. She delivers these insults, and I can't do them justice.
Yeah, it's definitely their delivery is like the best you can do is try to imitate it like them.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's good. So now we're at the tennis match and, you know, we're not actually watching Dorothy and Trudy play tennis because like, why would we do that to those actors? So instead we're watching Rose, Sophia and Blanche who are watching them play tennis off camera. I love all the colors that are happening. Like the stands are mint green. Betty White is in purple. Sophia is wearing a red visor. They're all wearing visors. She's wearing a red visor and it doesn't match her outfit at all. And I'm here for it. Yeah. I was actually surprised. I thought that there would have been a joke where like Blanche shows up wearing a tiny tennis outfit, even though she has no intention of playing. Like she's never played tennis. She just owns the costume, quote, you know, cause she wants to flirt with the landscaper.
Sounds like something I would
but
do.
It sounds like something you would do.
Yeah.
I was like, that felt like something Blanche would do, but sure. I understand that, you know, they just need to get to the point of the scene, I guess.
Yeah.
So Trudy and Dorothy are going back and forth playing tennis off camera, and then they take a quick break from playing. But before we get to that moment, I think we should take a break.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. Do you see what I did there?
Uh-huh. I did.
And we're back. So Dorothy and Trudy get back to playing out on the court. And here's the moment I like to call everyone fails Trudy and lets her die on the tennis court. Let's go ahead and play that moment.
Boy, Trudy is beating the dickens out of Dart.
Oh, I just have to catch my breath.
Are we going to play or do you want to forfeit?
No way. Now, Dorothy's born act doesn't know the meaning of the word forfeit.
And she's a teacher, too. No wonder the Japanese are ahead of us.
I mean, so what blew, and I've never been around someone who died suddenly of a heart attack, like which I assume that's probably what happens or what she is intending to happen to herself.
Right.
And, but the way she spoke when she was like, are we gonna play or are you gonna forfeit? You know what I mean? She wasn't out of breath. There was no like, do you want to play or do you want to forfeit? Like there was no like gasping for air, like myself going up two flights of stairs. There was none of the signs of near death in Trudy's voice. And so I give it to the women. Let her die on the field. If she's talking like that and drops dead, it was meant to be.
I know I said this the first time we recorded, but when Trudy falls down, they're like, oh, it looks like Trudy fell. She's not getting back up.
Yeah.
They're all just talking about it. Like they just stand there. None of them rush over. We don't hear Dorothy off camera being like, Trudy, are you okay? Like it weirdly makes the moment feel eerily calm.
Yeah.
Like there is no sense of urgency until the act break music and the women are like, oh, I guess we should like go down from the stands. Now
it kind of reminded me of like what I mean in this moment, because I knew you were going to bring this up as I was watching it. I was like, she's going to figure out that they're not responding to Trudy's death, because we talked about that in the original too. But this moment kind of reminds me of Seinfeld in that it feels like something the Seinfeld characters would do. Oh, wow. He's really not getting back up. Well, it's 4:00. Do you guys want to eat? Because if I eat after 6, I'm going to get heartburn. So we probably need to go.
Yeah.
You know, that like,
it does. It feels like sort of a Seinfeld moment. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, they're just like stepping over the body on their way out.
I'll drive.
So during our, they're like, oh God, we're so incredibly rude. They like go to like the dead body. Like, did you want anything from, we're going to Frank's Hot Dogs.
Should we maybe put a coat on her? It's probably gonna get cold. I mean, it's evening.
Yeah, let's put a coat on. Oh God, guys, this is horrible. I left my sunroof open. So what if we just spent the rest of this, if we spent the next like 30 minutes just riffing off of this one stupid Seinfeld joke?
We could create a whole evening that we have after leaving Trudy's body on the court.
We would lose so many listeners.
I think I already have with all of my tangents.
No, I think people have grown to love them. People are just skipping ahead 30 seconds, 30 seconds, 30 seconds.
There was a comment.
Doing
I
the
mean,
Seinfeld bit.
There's this great other Golden Girls podcast called Enough Wicker, and they take a sort of a scholarly approach to the Golden Girls episodes, and I'm so eager to have them on. We've been communicating. I think it's going to happen in July, so like, look forward to that. But there was a comment that I saw, I think, I don't know if they posted it or I read it or something, but someone was being like, I love how you guys get straight to the point and you talk about the episode and dissect the episode, unlike other podcasts that talk about themselves for 15 minutes. And I was like, I think they're talking about us.
Oh, they're for sure talking about us. I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it. All the love. You know, there's a million different things you can listen to, and we don't have to be loved by everybody. But I'm sure that person is probably listening to this because I also hate listening to things too.
Well, but that's just it. You just don't have to listen then, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, if you don't want to hear us talk about anything else, then just don't listen.
I
There's
love it.
So and many go, other great Golden Girls podcasts.
Go listen to all the Golden Girls podcasts. Exactly. Show them all.
Yes. So one thing I know I talked about last time in the podcast that I am not going to talk about this time, but I just want to, just for anybody else who's thinking it, I just want to say the logistics of Trudy faking her death, I don't think, like, the amount of people that would have to be
yes.
in on it, like an ambulance coming,
yeah,
like for people to, and then they have to know that she's dead. Who makes that call? Like, is somebody calling to pretend to be a doctor? Anyway, I talked about that last time. If you want to hear my deep dive, go back and listen to the original recording of this where I talk about logistically how it would be incredibly impossible for Trudy to pull off the thing that she pulled off, which actually makes her incredibly brilliant. So we come out of the act break. Trudy is dead, we think. Dorothy feels horrible, like a murderer. Rose tries to make her feel better by saying, you know, at the grief center, we teach people about acceptance. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if it actually would have been more helpful for Rose to give Dorothy advice on what it's like to accidentally kill someone in a heated moment, like she did with Freda Claxton.
Oh.
Like, that's a very specific experience that Rose could have shared. Hey, here's how I dealt with accidentally killing Freda Claxton with my mean words. You know, Rose has killed men in bed. Rose has accidentally killed so many people. Charlie, that other guy who's married.
Rose is a serial
Rose
killer.
Rose has accidentally killed. Yeah, if you think about
Rose
it.
Rose is the Dexter
Rose
of Miami.
Killed...
Wait, but Dexter's the Dexter of Miami.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Rose is the woman Dexter.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, I think that I'm sure Sophia has killed a couple people. Do I think she's killed more than Rose? No. And that is, it's incredible. Rose is a serial killer, I think.
Wow. If you had any of your
anyway,
friends, if there's one friend, this is another, sorry guys, I'm doing it. If there's one friend of yours that you, I mean, you don't have to say their name, but that you think they could kill someone in bed, like, because they're so good at sex, who would that friend be? Or do you have a friend in mind?
No.
I think my friend
My
Philip
friends
could.
Are all pretty boring in the best way.
My friend Philip could, I bet. Like, accidentally.
Why?
Because it's just so good.
But why?
Because he's so good at it.
Oh. How do you know?
I mean, I just know. But I don't know from personal experience, but I just know. You know what I mean? Like, you know,
okay.
We have those conversations.
Now that I think of it, I have a friend who's a really good dancer.
Oh, so like they could be so amazed by the, yeah, I get that. I get that. Interesting.
Like someone who's like, you know, when you see somebody dance and you're like, oh, okay, I could see where that might be able to translate to the bedroom.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Girl though, not a guy. So Blanche, I wanted to play this whole thing. And when I pulled it, I was like, oh, this is like a 4-minute clip. So I split it up into two so that you wouldn't get mad at me and be like, we can't play a 4-minute clip. But so Blanche says that she also has experienced something similar. So we're going to start this conversation that she has with Dorothy.
Remember, I was a blossoming belle who had just won the Little Miss Magnolia pageant.
Blanche, before you start, realize I am very vulnerable now. And in no mood to hear a story about you and some Yahoo cracker with four first names pawing at each other under a magnolia tree.
Well, pardon me, Dorothy, but we can't all come from places as socially acceptable as Brooklyn.
I'm sorry, Blanche, I'm sorry. Just go on with the story. Just try to shy away from words like tarnation and catfish.
Yahoo Cracker. What's so... this is huge shout out to the writers of this show, because I love that you pulled... These are the two clips that you pulled, because the sort of the nugget of her saying Yahoo Cracker. I mean, there is such a symbolism around the American use of the word cracker and what that means and the legacy of it and all of those things. But it's perfect alliteration here because it sets up how Blanche ends her story so perfectly that, like, you need Dorothy saying Yahoo Cracker to understand how Blanche ends this scene.
Right. So Blanche dives into a story about how when she was 8 years old, she met a girl named Kathy Lee on the playground. All I could think was Kathy Lee Gifford the whole time. But Blanche's parents didn't want
see
her to be
now out on the Starship cruise, eating fancy food and doing what they do. Do you remember those commercials that she would do?
I do now. So Blanche's parents didn't want her to be friends with Kathy Lee Gifford, because her mother wasn't in the Daughters of the Confederacy, which this is, I think, the first mention of the Daughters of the Confederacy.
Yeah.
So Blanche, you know, broke off the friendship, you know, otherwise her mother wouldn't give her like a new pair of riding boots. And now I want to jump back into the story and the exchange between Blanche and Dorothy.
Is this a story about acceptance?
Oh, because years later, to get back at me, Kathy Lee slept with my daddy. That was something I had to accept. Mama accepted it too, along with a brand new Cadillac Eldorado for her birthday. You know, my family had a few dollars and I loved them dearly, but when you get right down to it, basically they were trash.
The way she says trash, basically they were trash.
It's
like, so good.
Rue McClanahan must have slayed at monologues in high school theater club. Like, it, she's so good.
Yeah.
She's so good at that. She's so good at being Blanche.
Yeah.
Like, I've loved every other project that we've watched the women do. You know, every other Blanche project that we watch, as much as I loved watching her being like a singing Christmas nun, like all these things that we've watched Rue McClanahan do, she was, I still have yet to see her be as funny as when she was Blanche Devereaux.
It's just, it's so perfect. I do encourage people to go watch some of her work on Mama's Family and Maude, because it's a different level of funny and a different kind of funny, but it is very similar in that those shows recognize that, sure, she could lead a story, but she is best reacting to the star of the show and the crazy things that can happen when she reacts to a story, because she is
When she's gold. Like not the straight person.
When she's, she's gold when she does that. And there's some great episodes of Mama's Family where she has to react to Mama, and it's just so funny.
Yeah, we should also watch one of those soon. We should pick a good Mama's Family episode for a Beyond Golden Girls episode.
Very down.
So Dorothy is so upset that she has forgotten that she's throwing the reunion party at their house on Richmond Street.
Yeah.
And now we're at the reunion. Now, I feel like maybe we talked about this last time we watched this episode on the podcast, but what does the sign mean that's hanging up? It says, "Welcome League Champs 46.
Well, so that's what I wondered. Are these people not necessarily high school friends, but like, were they all a part of a certain club? Like, were they all?
Or like the tennis team or something? Because they're calling it like a class reunion, right? But
yeah,
like you'd think it would say like, you know, like whatever, you know, like our mascot, like we were called the Crusaders. So if it said like, "Welcome Crusaders, class of 01 or whatever, but this says "Welcome League Champs."
Yeah, we were the
pioneers.
And
I'm assuming it's class of 46.
We were the pioneers. 46. There were a lot of important people born in 1946, just FYI. Bette Midler.
Doesn't that make you feel really young to learn that the television program that we're watching, the women graduated high school in 1946.
Which isn't necessarily true, because then that would mean, when was, I mean, in that that doesn't make sense in terms of the timeline of this show, because Bea Arthur's character is supposed to be in her, what, early 60s, maybe? Maybe early 60s, maybe around 60, which means in yeah. in 1989, she would have been, if she was in her early, let's say she was 60 years old in 1989, what would that make her in 1946?
I don't, well, oh God, you know I hate doing math. I don't know the math. Spot.
Oh, wait, okay. let's do it.
Well, 79, let's say,
69, no,
okay,
59.
Well, let's say they were, okay, so 1946, subtract 18 years.
I guess they
years.
Would have been, you're right, they would have been in their teens in the 1940s.
They would have been, yeah, thank you, because I didn't want to do any more math, but... If they were born in 1926, so they would have been born in 1928, so 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, yeah. 80. They would have been 61. Yeah. 61. Ha ha ha. I figured the math part out.
Wow. Wow. It's, time is weird. Time is weird because, you know, like, like, it will.
This is, we are so off the rails.
But.
Oh God! I should have poured a glass of wine.
But think about it,
because
like
I knew it.
In 20 years, we're gonna be at that point. So that means someone will be talking about our graduating class. Yes, because if they're 61 and we're around the 40-ish age, so like
you just said, you graduated high school 4 years ago. Pick a lane.
I'm being honest when I want to be honest. But what I'm saying is, how weird is that?
Ah. I can't think about that. No, because it's no. That
you'll be
can't
in a different
be
place
because I have a very tiny child
that will be in college. When you're her age, when you're Dorothy's age in this show. I mean, of course, Beatrice Arthur was older than the character she's playing, but yeah, you'll have a child in college when Dorothy is celebrating her high school reunion. So you might kill a friend from high school, have a party, and you know. Little Zelda's gonna, little Oreo's gonna come back from college and be like, "Hi, mom," and you're gonna be like, "I killed Nikki."
I don't know what's happening right now, and I can't tell if I'm okay with it.
And Zelda's gonna come over to Michael and I's house and be like, "Mom is being weird. She killed someone. Can I stay here tonight?" And then we'll all go to a drag show, and everything will be okay.
Well, that part sounds nice. I should tell you real quick, this, I did not take Little Oreo to a drag show, but I did try to take Little Oreo to an outdoor music class.
Oh, how'd that go?
And poorly. So I basically, it was just like a drop-in class, but I basically spent $30 for my child to run around a park, like a free park that you just can go to. Because she did not want to sit down. She kept mad dogging Mr. Andy, the guy who teaches the class and sings the songs. There were like 7 kids. They were all sitting on blankets and playing with instruments. And every time Mr. Andy gave Little Oreo an instrument, she would take it and run away with it and point to the car like, "Let's go." Like she wanted to steal it.
That's my girl. I was like that too as a kid when I got older and stuff.
Yeah.
I never followed any of the rules. I still don't. Look where I am now. I am living a wonderful small apartment.
Yeah, well, it's because you don't want people to stay with you. Yeah. Anyway, this is why you and Little Oreo you were meant to be friends. So we're at the reunion. The room is full of like, I don't know, 12 people.
Yes.
It's like a bunch of non-speaking extras and one speaking actor who's pulling all the weight of all of the people there for the reunion. She's walking around talking to everyone like, "Where's Dorothy? Has anyone seen Trudy?" Like, and she's a delight.
Yeah.
But Dorothy is in her room. She's too upset to come out and tell everyone that Trudy is dead. And finally, Sophia goes into her room. She tells her a picture at Sicily story about being a bad party host.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, Dorothy decides to buck up and go tell everyone at the party that she accidentally killed Trudy. And this is what leads to one of Bea Arthur's, like, not most, but certainly a memorable, like, iconic moment on the show.
And I have to clarify, too. So you told me to end a clip at a certain point, but I extended it just a little bit because I love the follow-up to Dorothy's memorable line here almost as much as I love Dorothy's memorable line here. So we're going to play my part as well.
Let's do it.
Everybody, it happened this morning when we were playing tennis. Trudy's heart just couldn't take it. I'm so sorry that I dragged her out on the cord and made her run back and forth so hard. I wish it had been me instead of her, because it's all my fault. We might as well take down that banner and put up one that says, "Welcome to the Dorothy Killed Trudy Party."
Oh, darn, someone's late. Dorothy will have to give her speech all over again.
The fact that Rose's response to Dorothy's line got a bigger laugh than Dorothy. I mean, they both were at their peak of just like hilarity in that moment. And I love those two lines together. It's just like a volley of just a joke after a joke after a joke. It's so good.
It's so, so funny. And it's like such a funny Rose, like the perfect Rose joke.
Truly.
So yeah. And it's so great. And just the Dorothy Killed Trudy Party. Like, it's just, like it's so funny. It's so good. It's so classic. So who's at the door? It's Trudy. And yes, she's basically like, "Surprise, I'm alive." Which is very reminiscent of the time that Sophia held awake for herself and they forgot to tell her friends she was alive, and they all freaked out when she walked into the living room.
Yes.
So here's a question for you.
Yeah.
So was Trudy like waiting outside the door listening for Dorothy to make that announcement? Because I feel like she wouldn't want to come in before people thought she was dead. But also, like, what if there was a late, like, straggler to the reunion?
They'd
come in and be like, "Hey, Trudy McMahon's like hanging outside with her ear pressed to the door like a weirdo."
How
did Trudy make that timing happen?
That Trudy didn't make the timing happen. Her husband did, because he was in on it. We find out in the next scene that Trudy's husband is in on the joke, and Dorothy has to know at this point that Trudy's not dead. She has to, because
exactly.
So Trudy's husband, the hot guy at the gym who I would make eyes with in a different life, he kept Trudy back, and thus that's why the doorbell happens when it happens.
Right, but isn't Trudy's husband in Dorothy's room? Like, where is Trudy's? Because Trudy's husband isn't at the party.
Because why would Trudy's husband be in Dorothy's room now?
Well, for the big reveal of Dorothy's prank.
Well, but like, wouldn't that be? I don't know. I'm gonna give it up to the fantasy of sitcom television. I'm not gonna die on this hill.
All right. Yeah. The answer is Carrie, because it's a sitcom. Okay, so Trudy is like all pleased with herself, and she's like, you know, she reveals that faking her death was a practical joke. And a bunch of the party guests, when she says it was a practical joke, because everybody is shocked. The party guests are like, disappointed and disgusted, but it also a little bit sounds like it's coming from the studio audience. Like, how dare you upset B. Arthur like that? That is low. Like, that sort of, it feels like it's coming from the studio audience. Also, I think it could have been funny if Trudy really wanted to like crank up her practical joke a notch, she could have done like a Pepper's Ghost situation with some mirrors and lights, and she could have shown up to the reunion pretending to be a ghost for a while before being like, "Psych, I'm alive." I'm just saying, I'm pitching for anybody who's going to pull a Trudy McMahon that like maybe be a ghost for a while.
Yeah. Yes. I would be into that. I would be into it. I think that's a fun one.
Yeah. So Blanche and Rose are like, "Hey, you need to go apologize to Dorothy." So she goes into the bedroom to find Dorothy in bed with Trudy's husband.
I mean, the faces. Trudy is Dorothy and her husband in bed together, and the way they timed the shot of the shocked face is perfect. But yeah, so everyone and Trudy's like, "You just so get into bed with the husband right after your friend drops dead," and then of course there's the throw the blankets down reveal. Yeah.
Yes. And well, there's another really great Blanche moment where, you know, Trudy's like, what kind of person jumps into bed with her dearest friend's husband? And Blanche goes, well, not necessarily a bad person. Sometimes circumstance. Oh, you were talking to her. Okay.
There's also that moment between when Trudy's husband says something and it like infers that Dorothy is bad in bed. And then Dorothy goes, Ma, you know, like, do you remember that moment?
Yeah, Ma, not a word.
Yeah,
yeah, it's so good. It's so good. And, you know, and then they, yeah, like you said, they throw off the covers. Dorothy and Trudy's husband are clothed. They're like, gotcha. You know, Dorothy was on to Trudy. She had figured it out. So she was one-upping her with her practical joke. And
they make up so quickly.
Yeah, they go like, yeah, Trudy's like, I know, you know, Dorothy's Bornak, I've got one word for you. Boy, have I missed you. Like, that's the one thing she can say. And Blanche and Rose cannot believe that the women aren't mad at each other. And I'm like, I'm actually quite worried. I was like, is this a toxic relationship or is it really fun and games? I can't quite tell, but I don't want to think too hard about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, Rose and Blanche pretend to get mad at Dorothy for, you know, not telling them that she was playing a practical joke.
And then Blanche has that wonderful moment where she sneaks back around the corner after Dorothy thinks like, oh, I've lost my friends. And then Blanche is all like, gotcha.
So, and then the episode's over. But very quick question before we do our golden takeaways.
Yeah.
Trudy's practical joke. Do you think it falls under the practical joke category or was that like a straight up cruel, like prank lie?
I think it can be both. I think it can be a cruel practical joke.
I think it's beyond a practical joke. I feel like it's like a cruel manipulative lie to make someone think that you killed them.
I don't think it's necessarily a lie because you're going to reveal the lie. So like, it's not like an intentional lie. All practical jokes are basically a lie. It was just cruel. It was just wrong. You don't do that. You know, it was too far. It was just like what Blanche said. Some of the things we did in high school are inappropriate when we're adults.
Yeah, yeah, it's too far, Trudy.
Yeah.
Too far,
Trudy. Go back
but
to Funny Girl.
Overall, that's the episode. It was so fun to rewatch. It had been a minute since I'd seen that one, and I'm really glad we watched it. I thought it was really, really fun.
I loved every second of it, but I do think that we should get to our golden takeaway.
Yeah, oh, mine's so golden. Yeah.
Ooh, I'm ready. And we are back with our golden takeaway, which is a nugget of truth or inspiration that you can apply to your life or the lives of our listeners. Carrie, what is your golden takeaway from this episode?
So my golden takeaway is, speaking of practical jokes, in the show notes, I am going to drop a link to an amazing practical joke that I'm sure most of you have seen, maybe not all of you. A practical joke that was played to the women during a rehearsal on an episode of The Golden Girls. This is when all of the women they're doing the scene where Blanche hands out the men of Blanche's boudoir calendar.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And someone had made a calendar. A lot of the men who worked on the set, crew members and stuff, they'd taken photos of them sort of in sexy poses and stuff, and they put those in the calendar, and the women are flipping through them, and their genuine reactions of seeing these for the first time. It's so fun to watch. And that is a lighthearted practical joke that I feel like I can, I can condone. And we'll put it in the show notes because it truly is funny to watch.
There's also, I mean, similarly, there's one with, it's sort of a blooper, but it's not really a blooper. It's Betty White practicing the chat with her daughter or with her granddaughter, Bobby or whatever. And it's a stand-in doing the lines because the child actor can't be out there. And she starts putting on the makeup on the guy, the stage person doing the lines with her. And that isn't really a practical joke, but it is sort of just like a silly moment. I love those
moments.
It's
a silly moment, for sure.
Yeah. I was thinking about this during, like, what practical jokes do I like? And of course, I mentioned that I like Jackass, but mainly for the penis. So I think my favorite practical joke that I watch pretty regularly on YouTube is not from the Golden Girls at all, but it's from Ellen when Adele went to a Jamba Juice. Have you seen this video?
No, but the words Adele went to a Jamba Juice is very funny to me.
It's so, the whole thing, it really isn't a practical joke, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I don't know what a practical joke is, but she wears an earpiece and Ellen basically tells her things to do And she, Ellen did that with a bunch of different people, Kris Jenner, etc.
Isn't that what they do on Impractical Jokers? Isn't that what that show is?
That show's too straight for me. I don't know what that is about.
But, I don't watch it.
But on Ellen, so she has, she tells Adele as she's ordering a Jamba Juice, she's like doing stupid things. And then she tells Adele to cut off, you know, some of the grass, the wheatgrass or whatever they have. She tells Adele just to like literally take scissors out of her purse that she just has in her purse and cut off wheatgrass and eats it. Like, starts eating it. And the person, the Jamba Juice person, is like, what are you doing, Adele? Like, it's just like, it's a wild thing to watch. It's so fun. I'll send you the link to add to the show notes as well, because it's a fun, it's a fun little stupid watch. It has nothing to do with the Golden Girls, but it is a delightful practical joke that I loved so much. And I watch probably monthly.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
I will have to check out Adele in a Jamba Juice. Oh my goodness. Well, guys, that was another episode of Out on the Lanai. Thank you all so much for listening, and be sure to catch us back here next week for more Golden Girls greatness.
Oh, so much fun this episode. I feel like a lot of ground was covered. It was fun. Guys, we are a part of Mom. You know what to do. Go join Mom Plus and support all the great Mom podcasts. And you can find us on social media at Golden Girls Pod on Twitter, Out on the Lanai Official on Instagram, Golden Girls Pod on Facebook, and I am Sadie Pines and H. Allen Scott on everything.
And I'm Squidzy on Instagram and Squid Eat Squid on Twitter. And if you have a moment, please rate and review us wherever you get this podcast, because the more ratings we get, the more the show will get bumped up and the more people will discover it and join our lovely kick-ass community of Golden Girls fans.
I will say that, guys. Now, that's usually a throwaway thing we do at the end of the episode, but let me just say, you need to go leave a little review and a ranking. It really, really does help, especially since we're doing new episodes and we've joined a new network. It helps us tremendously to go and leave a little rating and review, and we would just very much appreciate it. And as always,
remember,
stay golden! Jackass Bean.